You're listening to Comedy Central.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
January 30th, 2019. From Comedy Central's World News headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition.
Tonight, former governor of New Jersey and the man who narrowly avoided becoming Donald Trump's vice president, Chris Christie, is joining us, everybody. Also on tonight's show, we've got good news for anyone who's ever wanted to live inside their freezer. And once again, Trump and intelligence don't mix. But first, let's catch up on today's headlines. The Fyre Festival. It's the greatest music concert that never happened. You've probably watched the documentaries on Hulu or Netflix that show how this whole thing was the biggest scam from start to finish. And if you haven't watched them, please go and watch it. Like, I'm begging you, you have to watch these. I'll do anything to get, I'll suck your dick. Go and watch them. Anyway, because many supermodels convinced people to pay for the festival by saying they would be there, many are now asking if those models should also be held legally responsible.
CBSNews.com reports Kendall Jenner and other top models can be subpoenaed after the fiasco over the Fyre Festival. Several celebrities, including Hailey Bieber and Bella Hadid, were paid to appear in the promotional video for the 2017 music festivities in the Bahamas. But the event was canceled at the last moment, stranding hundreds of people. Well, this week, a judge signed off on subpoenas submitted by the trustee overseeing the festival's bankruptcy. The models could be forced to turn over the money they made.
Okay, now look. I get why people are pissed, but I don't know if you can go after the models because some con artist hired them to make an ad for a festival that didn't happen, right? The only thing the models might be guilty of is being super hot, right? And even then, I don't know. Like, I'm gonna need to see a lot more evidence. I don't know. I'm an impartial guy. That's all I'm saying. The truth is, making something look better in an ad than it is in real life is just advertising. It's like ads for Spirit Airlines show planes not falling apart in the sky, but no one sues them. Spirit Airlines, we're the Fyre Festival of the sky. Speaking of viral scams, the anti-vaccine movement. Over the past 20 years, there's been a growing number of people who believe that kids shouldn't get vaccinated because the vaccines are more dangerous than the diseases that they prevent. And clearly the diseases heard that and they were like, oh, it's on.
Now to new fears about the growing measles outbreak. A state of emergency has been declared in Washington state as the number of confirmed cases climbs to 35.
The measles is spectacularly contagious. One thing that's important, if you do think you have the measles, do not go to the emergency room. It could infect others. Just call your doctor first.
And when you call your doctor's gonna be like, oh, now you want my advice? No, I'm joking. Take two D's and call me in the morning. D's, yeah, D's nuts. Guys, I'm sorry. No one should be dying from a disease that was cured 60 years ago. It's 2019 and people are dying from measles? As a society, there are things we shouldn't die from anymore, okay? Measles is such a throwback disease. It's like being hit by a cannonball or getting run over by a chariot. That doesn't happen anymore if you don't live in Brooklyn, okay? Anyway, moving on to another health-related story. You know how sometimes you eat chicken nuggets and you think, nah, these taste like rubber? Well, there might be a reason for that.
For the second time this week, there's a nationwide chicken nuggets recall to tell you about this morning. Tyson now recalling white meat panko chicken nuggets. They could be contaminated with bits of rubber.
What? I don't even understand what that means. Because, like, on the one hand, that's gross, but on the other hand, they're chicken nuggets. Like, the rubber is probably the most nutritious part, you know? And this story actually has some huge implications. A chicken nugget recall could lead to a shortage, right, which could affect their number one customer. And then, all of a sudden, Trump is invading Turkey. Like, turkeys are friends with chickens, folks. That's where they're hiding. And finally, moving on to some major international news.
The world's oldest desert is home to one of the most listened to songs, Africa, by the band Toto. The artist Max Siedentopf has set up a sound installation in the Namibian coastal desert to play on a loop in tribute to the soft rock classic. The installation is powered by solar batteries to keep Toto going for all eternity.
Wow. This is amazing. Someone has invented an Apple battery that lasts for more than a year. Wow. And look, this art installation sure sounds like a cool idea, but can you just imagine if you were lost in the desert? And then you hear music playing over the next sand dune, and you're like, oh my God, I'm saved. I'm saved. Somebody's there. And then you're like, oh no, it's just a phone playing music. And you're like, well, at least I can call for help. No, it's just an iPod. No! I bless the rains down in the... What a cool song to die to. All right, let's move on to our top story. This week, there have been a ton of stories developing every day. Congress is trying to avert another shutdown. Britain is still on the brink of a disastrous Brexit, and Venezuela is inching closer to civil war. But nobody cares about any of that today because it's too damn cold.
Cities across the Midwest are scrambling to protect people from this deadly polar vortex that is blasting the region with what is called the coldest air in decades,
plunging to as low as 70 degrees below zero in some cities. It's so cold outside, the U.S. Postal Service, which almost never stops delivering, suspending service in 11 Midwestern states because of safety concerns.
We can't say it enough. Before it's all said and done, the wind chill here will feel like it's 50 to 60 degrees below. So if you can stay inside, please do so. It's important.
Yeah, we're all inside because we're not idiots. Why are you outside, newsman? You know, seriously, I never get why reporters have to go into the bad weather to warn us about it. Like, just tell us from the studio, we believe you. Like, if you're sitting at the desk and you tell me it's cold, I'm not sitting at home like, is it though? Let me see your nipples. They don't do this for any other type of story. They're never like, earlier today, a man was shot in the leg and it looked like this. Bah! Ah! But the point is, it is incredibly cold in America right now. Like, super cold. It's so cold that I looked in the mirror this morning and told myself to go back to Africa. We're talking minus 70. Anytime you're in negative numbers, you know the thing's out of hand. Because you realize when they made zero, they thought that would be the lowest. That's why it's zero. If they thought there was gonna be anything lower, then they would have made that zero. But somehow, we are way below zero. In fact, right now, America might be the coldest place on Earth and beyond.
People in the Dakotas and northern Minnesota saw wind chills plummet to minus 50. That's colder than the top of Mount Everest.
Colder than Antarctica, Siberia, and Mount Everest.
It will be colder in Chicago than it is in Antarctica or Alaska or the North Pole.
Combined.
Believe it or not, at times it's actually colder in some parts of the country than the surface of Mars.
God damn. Colder than Mars? I guess that means it's really cold? Because I gotta be honest, I have no idea what the weather is on Mars. If I had to guess, I'd be like, it's sandy? Is that a weather? Is that a thing? I don't understand why they do this on the news. Why are you using Mars as a reference point? None of us have been there. It's colder than Mars. Oh yeah, I spent summer in Mars. It was rather cold. I don't know what's happening on other planets. I barely know about anything on Earth, and I live here. You could tell me Mars was named after Bruno Mars, and I'd be like, yeah, makes sense. Yeah, he's a popular guy. Like, the news is always explaining things with the most random comparisons. An asteroid is headed towards the Earth and it weighs as much as 5,000 elephants. That's not helpful to anyone, okay? No one knows how heavy an elephant is. Like, well, it's the Americans don't, because in Africa, we measure everything in elephants. It works for us. Like, yeah, we'll just be like, as you can see, this is a very spacious property. 40 elephants big, huh? And it has a baby hippo jacuzzi. And I know what you're thinking. This probably costs 3 tigers. No, there's no tigers in Africa, you racist. Yeah, and if you don't understand what colder than Mars means, don't worry, because maybe a few scientific demonstrations will help.
This is a clear piece of glass, as you can see. I got some water in my hand. I'm gonna pour it on here. You see that? Look, it's gonna freeze instantly. You see it crystallizing right there. This cold is absolutely no joke.
I'm gonna pour a little water on Barbie's hair. We'll give it a few seconds, and you'll see how fast her hair is going to freeze out here.
One man actually turned this super frozen banana into a makeshift hammer.
Okay, this didn't teach me how cold it is, but it did teach me how weird this guy is. His wife is probably like, honey, can you shovel the driveway? And he's like, I can't, I'm testing different fruits to see if they can be hammers. And after that, I'm building a birdhouse out of kiwis. Now, it goes without saying, most of us are miserable when it's this cold. But apparently, there's one group that is having a blast right now, the police.
A sheriff's department in Minnesota using the cold to freeze a uniform in place so it stands on its own.
Yeah, meanwhile, some police officers in central Illinois say they've caught the criminal responsible for this brutal weather.
And they're not letting her go.
Elsa, the snow queen from Frozen, was taken into custody.
Police in Missouri asking criminals to take a break because it's too cold to fight crime.
That's right. It's so cold that the police are sending out tweets just asking criminals to please not commit any crimes. Yeah. They're basically just asking the criminals to stop the crime for them, which is ridiculous. What's next? Are they just gonna ask people to arrest themselves? Just gonna be like, yeah, we're gonna mail you a self-arrest kit. It's got a Miranda rights, handcuffs, some drugs to plant on yourself, and a body cam. But whatever you do, don't turn it on, okay? It causes more trouble than it's worth. Just keep it off, trust me. But look, it is dangerous outside. It's super cold, so stay home if you can. Stay warm if you go out, and if you see someone in need, please help them out. This is one of the most vulnerable periods for anybody who does not have a place to stay. Because right now, there are millions of people in harm's way. And yet, even with that many people affected, President Trump has found a way to steal the spotlights.
The president sees this, and it prompts him to tweet the following. In the beautiful Midwest, wind chill temperatures are reaching minus 60 degrees, the coldest ever recorded. In coming days, expected to get even colder. People can't last outside even for minutes. What the hell is going on with global warming? Please come back fast. We need you.
Ah, some brilliant analysis from French Fry the Science Guy. Yeah, according to the president, a cold snap is proof that global warming isn't real. Like, I'm just like, Trump never stops. Even the coldest day of the year, the rest of us are having a brain freeze, and he's like, nothing to freeze here, firing on all cylinders. I won't lie, let me tell you this. If I was ever trapped in the Alps, I would hope that I get trapped with Trump. I won't lie, because the cold clearly doesn't affect him. Like, I would probably be there, like, so cold, we've got to do something. And he'd be like, you're right, we gotta build a wall. Nancy Pelosi, crooked Hillary. And I'd be like, I'm gonna die. Of course you're gonna die, Trevor. MS-13 coming over the border. They're coming. But once again, the president of the United States is the leading voice of climate change denial. So to help us clear up these misconceptions, please welcome back our senior science correspondent, Ronny Chang, everybody. Ronny, help us out. Can you explain to people like President Trump how a cold snap doesn't mean there's no global warming?
No, Trevor, I can't. I'm sick of this shit.
Every time Trump sees an ice cube, he's all like, oh, well, where's the global warming? And then all his journalists have to come on TV and explain the difference between weather and climate, even though it's the simplest thing in the world. Everyone understands it. Kids get it. Dogs get it. Even my idiot boss gets it. The only person who doesn't get it is President Frosty the Slow Man.
Ronnie, come on. Maybe if we keep explaining it, Trump will eventually understand, you know? It's the motto we have, no man child left behind.
Really, Trevor? This is it? We're gonna change his mind this time? All right, okay, sure, fine. Okay, here we go again. Look, you see this? You see this line? It's global temperatures, okay? And it's going up. It's going up. If this was going down, you'd be right, and we'd be the dumbasses. But it's going up, so you're wrong, and you're the dumbass, okay? Even if you flip the chart upside down, it's still going up. Up! So, it doesn't matter if it's sometimes cold in Cincinnati because the line keeps going the f*** up! Up! Sorry, Trevor, I tried, but I just can't do it anymore.
Actually, I think you explained that pretty perfectly. Ronnie Chang, everybody, we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Daily Show. There are a lot of things that President Trump inherited from President Obama that we know he hates. The Affordable Care Act, the White House vegetable garden, the container of cocoa butter Obama left behind in the bathroom. He's like, this is terrible, doesn't taste like cocoa or butter. But what Trump probably hated the most was the intelligence officials who stayed on after Obama left.
Do you think any intelligence agencies, US intelligence agencies, are out to get you?
Well, certainly in the past, it's been terrible. You look at Brennan, you look at Clapper, you look at Hayden, you look at Comey, you look at McCabe, you look at Strzok and his lover, Lisa Page.
It's so cute how Trump lists all the members of the deep state like they're Santa's reindeer, you know? He's like, you know, Brennan and Clapper and Hayden and Comey, but do you recall the most famous of all? He just loves everybody. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. But after cleaning house and firing his enemies, Trump's intelligence community is now led completely by people he handpicked. Although after yesterday, he might want to pick again.
Tonight, top U.S. intelligence officials are openly contradicting President Trump's assessment of some of America's most dangerous adversaries.
On Iran, U.S. intelligence agencies say Tehran is still not restarting its nuclear program.
At the moment, technically, they're in compliance.
President Trump today launching a remarkable series of attacks on his own top intelligence officials. He calls them, quote, extremely passive and naive about Iran, saying that the United States needs to be careful and suggesting, get this, perhaps intelligence should go back to school.
Go back to school? The intelligence community doesn't need to go back to school. They're intelligence. They know more than anyone. Like, you realize they know what's in the presidential daily briefing. Not even the president knows what's in that. But I do understand why Trump's mad. Because yesterday, his own intelligence officials said that everything he believes is bullshit.
A striking difference over one of the biggest issues looming over the White House, Russia.
I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
We expect Russia will continue to wage its information war against democracies and to use social media to attempt to divide our societies.
And on ISIS?
We have won against ISIS.
ISIS is intent on resurging and still commands thousands of fighters in Iraq and Syria.
Wow, that is awkward. Especially the part about ISIS, because when he claimed victory, Trump was basically spiking the football. And now the officials are like, no, we've reviewed the touchdown, we're calling it back. Also, we're worried about your head trauma because you've been saying some crazy shit. And the most painful contradiction of all might have been their differences over North Korea.
And we have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un. No more rockets, no more missiles, no more nuclear testing.
We currently assess that North Korea will seek to retain its WMD capabilities and is unlikely to completely give up its nuclear weapons and production capabilities.
The regime is committed to developing a long-range nuclear armed missile that would pose a direct threat to the United States.
Oh, man, this is heartbreaking, guys. Trump is running around on the streets saying he loves Kim and how much they're in love. And now his intelligence team is telling the whole world that Kim's not that into him. The only way this would be more humiliating is if Trump tried to hold Kim's hand in public and Kim just swatted it away. Hashtag never forget. But look, after yesterday, it's very clear there's two totally different views of the threats facing America today. And the American people, you have to make a choice. Are you going to believe the heads of the CIA, the FBI, and the Director of National Intelligence? Or the guy who doesn't believe in global warming? We'll be right back.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight is a former federal prosecutor and governor of New Jersey who ran for president and served as head of President Trump's transition team. His new book is called Let Me Finish, Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the Power of In-Your-Face Politics. Please welcome Governor Chris Christie. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Happy to be back.
Interesting. You were the third guest on my show.
I was.
You were also one of the only, in fact, you are the only Republican who supports Trump who's come back to the show post-Trump winning.
Huge bravery.
So brave, Chris.
So brave. Brave.
You've also
so
got brave. Nothing to lose, which helps.
Well, you know, listen, it's... you know... Sometimes that's when you're bravest, Trevor.
That
you know?
Is when
all
you're
right?
bravest, right?
Never know.
How do you feel about these Republicans who seem to be pro-Trump or with him, and then when they're leaving, all of a sudden they're like, he is the worst thing in the world. It seems like bravery does happen when the people leave.
Yeah, when you don't have to look at them every day or something,
right.
I guess that's probably it. But, you know, they weren't brave in the beginning, you know, and what they're doing now is just... faux bravery, so
that's
the way it goes.
Hurricane Sandy was, for you, one of the most seminal moments in your life and your career. It's interesting because you went on this roller coaster ride of approval ratings. Hurricane Sandy, around that time, people said, Chris Christie could be the next president of the United States.
I recall that.
Yeah. And then, a while later, like, this picture was one of those that made you one of the most hated men.
Yeah.
in the United States when, like, a beach was shut down and there was, you know, a shutdown and, yeah. and you were out on the beach with your family. Mm-hmm. What was that like? Just genuinely from your side as a human being, going from, like, everyone loving to you to feeling like everyone hates you.
Try to make me cry.
No, I'm serious.
No, though. I mean, listen, seriously, like, that's often what political life is like. You know, very rarely is there somebody in political life who does anything that's worth anything,
right.
that remains popular all the way through. Because if you're doing stuff that matters and stuff that needs to be done in your state or in this country, you're going to anger some people. You have to. Because unless you're just giving everything away, unless you're just saying yes to everybody, even if you don't mean it, you're going to make some people angry. You know, to me, like, it's never fun. Mm-hmm. Like, you always would much rather be 75% than 15%.
Right.
But in the end, does it really matter? Like, to me, what matters is what you did and what you accomplished. And so for me, that's what always mattered the most. No one likes it. Anybody who says they like being unpopular at times is just completely full of it. I didn't like it. But I also tried to have some perspective on it. That wasn't why I did it in the first place anyway, mm-hmm. was to be popular. And I used to tell my folks, when we were at 75%, like, we're not keeping this in the desk drawer and, like, just looking at it and go, look how pretty that 75% is. Let's go spend it. Let's go do the difficult things that'll bring that down. And then you got to live with it.
You've written a book. Let me finish. Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the power of in-your-face politics. You take us through a little bit of how you began, a little bit of your life, the journey that made you into Chris Christie as people know you. And then you really get into the meat of the presidential campaign. From you announcing, from you going into the race, all the way through to dropping out, and then the story with Donald Trump.
Right.
Let's start at the beginning of this journey, when you were running and Donald Trump was running. You guys had been friends for a while.
Yeah, at that time, we'd been friends for about 14 years.
Did you think he stood a chance?
No.
Why not?
I thought the whole thing was a joke at the time. I really did. I mean, you know, he'd been talking about running for president for a long time.
Right.
I mean, going back 20 years. And so when he finally, he was getting older. And when he finally declared, I thought to myself, well, he's not going to stay in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is going to be something where he's going to do it for a little while, get into a debate or two, experience it, and then go, I don't need this. I'm going to go away. So the whole premise of me, and not just me, but most of the other men and women that were up on that stage was like, all right, he's getting some attention now, but he can't be serious about this.
Is that why you guys didn't work as hard to attack him? It felt like everyone was leaving him and it was like, forget him, he's fun.
You know what it really was? Part of the problem was there were so many of us, and he had so much popularity in the polls early that all the rest of us, there was just a little bit left for everybody. So you remember when people would go to attack him, like Rand Paul went to attack him, and he would look at me and go, you're a 2%, you're nothing, you're never going to win, leave me alone, right? Or
you shouldn't even be on the stage.
You shouldn't be on the stage. Who are you? That kind of thing. And everybody saw that happening, and the media would react to that and play it over and over again. So it would be like, you know, getting you know, sand kicked in your face, not just once, but like 100 times. And so people said, well, let's wait. The strategy of everybody was, let's wait till we're down to the last few, and then we'll go after him.
Uh-huh. But when you saw that happening, when you saw Trump becoming a viable candidate, the race changed quite a bit. Did it change your friendship?
You know, interestingly, no, because we never, except for one instance that I detail in the book.
Right. What is that instance?
Well, that instance was, I got the endorsement of the Manchester Union Leader in New Hampshire, which is the biggest newspaper in New Hampshire and the biggest endorsement to get in the primary. And he was really pissed.
Right.
And so he was in South Carolina when it happened, and then he gives some speech saying that, you know, Bridgegate, he knew all about it.
Right.
I know he knew about it. He had breakfast with these people every morning. What were they talking about? It was all made up, right? All made up.
But how do you still stay friends with somebody who's accusing you of being part of something that is a crime?
Well, part of it is politics, right? I mean, people accuse people of everything in politics sometimes, and if you break every relationship you have with someone who says something bad about you, you're going to be eating dinner alone in politics because it's a nasty game. But also what happened was when he did that, then I went after him. So I was in Iowa when he did that. That night I went after him and I said, listen, Donald Trump said a whole bunch of lies about me today. Let me tell you the truth. We don't need a wall.
Uh-huh.
We're never going to build a wall, even if he's elected. And if we ever did build a wall, I can guarantee you one thing. Mexico ain't ever going to pay for it.
Right.
And, you know, the crowd.
Do you still believe all of those things?
Listen, it looks like I was right.
Do you still believe all of those things?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Listen, that's what I ran on. I don't think we need those things. Do we need some more security at the border? Of course we do. And I think everybody agrees on that.
Right.
But do we need what he was talking about then, which was a concrete wall from one end of the border to the other? No. And I said that at the time.
Right.
And now he doesn't even say anymore that that's
what
we
need.
Now
he says a fence.
Right, a fence,
a fence wall.
Or steel slats or something like that. But the point
more like
was
a stern warning.
When I went after him, the next morning, Corey Lewandowski, who was campaign manager at the time, called my campaign manager and said, listen, Donald's really sorry. He didn't mean to say any of that. He knows it was wrong. He knows that wasn't true. And he wants a truce. And so I said to my guy, if he wants a truce, he calls me. And so he called me and he admitted he didn't mean it. He knew it wasn't true. He was just angry and he apologized.
So let me ask you this then. You get to that point
yep.
where you've now, okay, fine.
And then he didn't say anything anymore, by
right,
the way.
Right, there's been a truce. But then you were the first prominent Republican to stand behind Donald Trump. Like,
yep.
I'll never forget, there was this, the debate that we watched together where out of nowhere, it was like watching the Royal Rumble, we thought you would be going after him, and then you just kicked Marco Rubio in the jaw, basically took him out of the race.
Yeah.
And you backed Trump.
That happened after it. Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying you backed him. Did you genuinely believe at that time that this man was the best man to be president of the United States?
Here's what I believed. I believed that he was going to win. That he was going to win the Republican nomination. He had come in second place
but
in Iowa.
But did you believe that he deserved to win?
Well, like, hold. No, I thought I deserved to win.
Right? Like, yeah. Touché.
Right? All right. I mean, so, you know, because I get asked this question a lot for
right.
obvious reasons. And I go, let's be clear here. He was not my first choice for president.
Right.
I was. Right? So, but then I was trying to be practical. I looked at it and I said, none of the rest of these guys on the stage are going to beat him. They're just not. After he came in second place in Iowa, won New Hampshire 2-1.
But don't you think you were part of that prophecy?
No, it was over by then. When he won New Hampshire, South Carolina by double digits.
Yes.
In fields of 12, 13 people. It's over. It's just over. I knew it was over. And I sat there with my wife on the couch watching South Carolina. And I said, listen, we've been friends with this guy for 14 years. He's going to be the nominee. We got two choices. Either stay on the sidelines or support him and try to make him a better candidate. And I thought I could talk to him in ways that nobody else could talk to him because of the 14-year friendship. That, like, for instance, when he was doing all the stuff with Judge Curiel.
Yes.
I was the guy who got called in by his family to talk to him and say, you have to stop this.
Right.
It's not right. It's not right to go after this judge because he's a Mexican-American. Stop it. Put out a statement saying you're going to stop it and don't do it anymore. And I got called in to do that. And I did it. And I convinced him to put out a statement saying he wouldn't do it anymore. And he didn't do it anymore.
So it's interesting. You say you wanted this man to be a better candidate and you thought you could help him.
Yep.
The book is really engaging. And it's an interesting insight into the world that you have and Trump has and the people around him have, especially when it comes to the Kushners. Because the way you lay it out in the book, you make it sound like Jared Kushner has the power in the White House.
I mean, he is the most powerful person in the White House next to the president.
And you argue that you didn't get the job as vice president because of Jared Kushner.
Sure. That's exactly why. Listen, the Wednesday night before the president, the now president, announced his running mate on a Friday, I was in Washington, D.C. working on the transition. He called me that night on the phone. He said, are you ready? I said, am I ready for what? He goes, you know what I'm talking about. Are you ready? And I said, well, if you ask, I'm ready. And he said, well, talk to Mary Pat and make sure she's okay. I'm going to make my announcement tomorrow.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Now, I don't know, Trevor. That sounds to me like it's going to be me.
Right.
And then about 2 hours later, a high-level staff person on the campaign that was with him called me and said, he just called the family and told them that it's going to be you. And Jared and Ivanka have said they're getting on a plane at 6 a.m. to Indianapolis to come and talk to him and tell him he's got to go see Mike Pence again. So I don't know if it was Jared who made sure that I wasn't vice president, but then they went to see Pence, and then I didn't get it.
Right.
So
let's look at that part in the book, because this is really fascinating, where you talk about this moment between the two of you. There's a lot of tension that's happening here. Jared comes to you at one point and basically says to you, to your face, he says, this is basically for what you have done to my father.
Right.
Because you were basically responsible for putting his father in jail.
No, let's be clear. His father was responsible for going to jail.
No, putting him in jail.
Semantics. Really important.
Right.
Because when someone says a prosecutor put someone in jail, I did my job.
Right.
My job is when people break the law in my state and I have the evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that they did, then they go to jail. Whether they're the richest guy in the state, which is what he was at the time, or whether they're a low-level drug dealer, who committed a crime and killed somebody, they go to jail.
So you think it was him enacting his vendetta? He was saying, you're not going to be vice president because of what you did to my dad.
Right. And listen, that's not when he had to talk with me. It was earlier than that, when Trump was making me the chairman of the transition, which was in May. He came into Trump's office uninvited and made the argument in front of me to his father-in-law that I couldn't be chairman of the transition because I was untrustworthy, because I had pursued his father and put him in jail, and that was a family matter that should have been resolved by the rabbis and not by a prosecutor.
Do you think that you would have been...
Yeah, I reacted the same way, by the way.
Do you think, because if you asked it the other way, you find like Jared and them would have said, Mike Pence was a better VP because Trump was so, just so caught up in all of his scandals, the pussy tape, etc. You wanted someone next to him.
Remember, they didn't know about that tape then.
Right, but I'm saying they wanted somebody who was the squeaky clean Bible guy, and they were like, oh, maybe Chris Christie's not the right VP to have next to Trump.
Well,
he's got Bridgegate.
I'm definitely not the Bible guy, but I'm from New Jersey. But But nonetheless, like, the point is, that should be the president's choice.
Yes.
And it shouldn't have to worry about me having... And Trump said it that day in the meeting, because he made me chairman of the transition.
Right.
And he said to Jared, you can't blame him for doing his job. He was just doing his job. And let me remind you what this guy did. I mean, besides tax evasion and violating federal election laws, when he found out we were investigating him and that his sister had been called to the grand jury because she was part of the owner of the company, he hired a prostitute to go after his sister's husband, seduce his sister's husband, videotape it, and then he took the videotape and sent it to his own sister on the day of her son's engagement party to intimidate her from going and speaking in front of the grand jury. Now, listen, I know some families have problems. But I and my family has been one that's like, we talk and we'll battle with each other.
Right.
I never hired a hooker, right, to go and videotape it and send it to my sister. I mean, so we're not talking about, a parking ticket.
Yes.
And my point to Jared and to anybody who's ever asked me about this is, when you do something like that, you have to be held accountable. And by the way, it wasn't a jury that found him guilty. He pled guilty. He admitted guilt to 18 counts.
Right.
So my point is, like, you've got to let – I understand it's his father. Nobody would want their father to go to jail. Uh-huh. I totally understand that. But at some point, as you get older, you've got to understand that, well, I'm an adult now. My father has to take responsibility for his own conduct, and I can't blame the guy who was just doing his job.
Let's talk about the transition before I let you go.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the parts of the book that I genuinely was engrossed by. You talk about how you spent a really long time compiling a giant dossier of, like, what your transition team would be, what Trump's transition should look like,
yep.
all of the people who would help him to become president.
Yep.
You then get kicked off the transition team.
Yep.
They throw away all of your work.
Yeah.
And as we saw, the transition was a disaster.
Total.
Right? Do you think that you could have helped Donald Trump to become presidential, the thing that people have been searching for from the very beginning?
Well, I don't know about that. But I think what we could have done was gotten him off to a much better start and put more good people around him. You know, there's that old saying, right? Garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
Right? So if you have a bunch of people around you who are not good, mm-hmm. it significantly decreases your ability to be good.
But let me ask you this. You say in the book, this was interesting, because in the book, there's a passage where you talk about Trump and you say he's not a good judge of character, or he makes rash decisions. You say he's very impulsive. Yes,
impulsive.
He's impulsive.
Yeah.
And you say he surrounds himself with guys who are, you know, con men and people who are shady and people who are just not, you know, the right people to be
some
around.
Of them are. Yeah,
right, right, right.
Are.
But then did you never not ask yourself that question, like, why does he want me around then?
No, well, apparently he didn't. But it's not like all the people around him are bad. And it's not like every decision, personnel decision he makes is bad. But the problem is that if you don't have the process set up to vet people, right? So
right.
they threw all that away. And so, you know, they were like vetting people on Google. I mean, and you can't do that, because what happens is you miss things. And someone can sit across from you in a meeting and impress you one day in an hour or uh-huh. 2 hours, and they may seem okay. And we've all met people like this. And then all of a sudden, you find out other stuff about them. You do a little research. You go, oh, yeah, that guy's not good.
Right.
And you move on. He threw that entire process away. Jared, Steve Bannon, Rick Dearborn, those three guys took 30 volumes. It's not just my work. We had 140 people, all volunteers, working from May till November.
Yes.
To put together 30 binders of stuff on, you know, so they wouldn't have had to write
on everything.
An executive order on the back
right,
of an envelope
right,
that
right.
was going to get thrown out of court on some kind of travel ban
right,
scam, right?
I'm with you, but let me ask you this then. Let me ask you this. You're in a position where, as Chris Christie, you're friends with Donald Trump, the man who's about to become president of the United States, or has a good chance of becoming
yeah.
president of the United States. You are engaging with him in debate prep. You
yep.
talk about in the book where you are out with this man and you're playing golf. And the reason you're playing golf is because you realize that he does not want to sit down and read anything. So you think you can trick him into learning things before the next debate, essentially.
Well, not trick him, but what I began to understand and learn was that he learned much better verbally than he did in writing. So that if we sat and had a conversation, it's true. And then, you know, some people, and over...
But at this point, you're like, this man should be the president of the United States?
No, remember, hold on. Remember what I said. He was going to be the Republican nominee. He was going to be.
Right.
That was over.
So in your head, going, I have to try fix this, basically.
I want to make it better.
And you thought
he's going to be the nominee. Well, damn, man, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think I could.
Right.
Right away. Like this, I wasn't getting paid. And my point was, I love the country. This guy's going to have a 50-50 shot to be president.
Right.
So let's try to make him as good as we can make him. And let's see if we can make this work.
And when you were with him on the golf course, you guys are playing, and between holes, you're
we
trying to
playing,
brief.
We weren't playing, because I don't play.
Oh, so you're just trying to brief him between
no,
holes.
No, what happened was we went to the golf course for lunch.
Yes.
And I said to him, listen, we need to talk about the health care reform
right.
stuff. So where do you want to do that? And he goes, well, have you ever seen the course? And I said, no, I've never seen this course. He goes, well, let's get in the golf cart, and we'll ride around, and we'll talk. And what happened, and that's an interesting part of the book, I started to try to talk to him about it. He didn't want to talk about it. What he wanted to talk about was that he was concerned that, like, this might really happen. I might win. And he said, yeah. And he said to me, like, I'm concerned.
This is so says, crazy, man. I'm sorry, man.
And he says, well, listen, I think if you talk to President Obama, President Bush 43, President Clinton, that there comes a moment when you're running, you want to win.
Right.
But then there's a moment when it goes, whoa, I may actually win.
Right.
I personally never got to that moment. But I wished I'd gotten that moment, but I didn't. That's a different moment. And what he was saying to me that day was, he was talking to me about, I've run a family business, I've taken care of my kids, I'm worried about what's going to happen when I'm not there every day, and they have to do this, and they're going to do, are they going to do well or not? Is things going to work out? And we sat there talking for, instead of talking about healthcare reform, we sat there for about an hour riding around this course talking about being a father.
So when you
and what that and what your responsibility is in public, because he had never been in public life before. So he's asking me, like, listen, you've been doing this for a long time. How do you make time to see your kids? How do you deal with the things they need from you when you've got this really important job? It's not the kind of conversation that most people think Donald Trump would want to, would be having. And that's one of the reasons I put it in the book. It started off as a bad story. Like, he didn't want to talk about healthcare reform.
Right.
But in the end, we talked about something that in a personal way was meaningful. And something that I think most people wouldn't think of him. And that's one of the reasons I put it in the book, because we know all the stuff we know, all the tweeting and the stuff that you were talking about for the first half hour of the show. But that's something that most people wouldn't know, and that because I was his friend and around then, I had a window into, and I thought was important to share with the public so that they got more information about the guy who's sitting in the Oval Office.
So then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If he was to call you today and say, Chris, I need you. Remember that night that I called you? I should have followed through. I should have given you the ring. Will you,
or the rose, or whatever?
Will you come and join me at the White House? I need you in my administration. Would you say yes?
He's offered me six different jobs since he's there, and I've said no to all of them.
Why?
Because there were no jobs that he offered me that I wanted.
And which job would you want?
I told him way back, and I put this in the book, when I endorsed him a day or two later when we were campaigning around together, he said to me, hey, if I win this thing, what do you want? And I said, there's only two jobs that I'm interested in. Vice president or attorney general. That's it. I said, those are the two jobs that I think I'm most qualified for and the ones that would excite me the most and where I think I could do the most good. I'm not looking for another title. I got plenty of titles.
So let me ask you this. Would you run for president again?
You never say never.
Would you run against Trump? Do you think you could beat him?
No. In a primary in 2020? Probably not.
Do you think any Republican could beat him?
I don't think so. Not now. Now, listen, politics is a dynamic thing, and you never know.
Right.
But based on what we see right now, no, I think you're the incumbent president. It's very hard to beat an incumbent president in a primary. And he's still highly popular among Republican Party voters. I think the last poll I saw had him at like 80 or 81% approval among Republicans. So if 81% of the people like the guy you're running against, that only leaves 19% for you. So that's not a good game to play. So no, but I'm 56 years old. Would I think about doing it again? Of course I would think about it, but only if I saw a reasonable path to win. Like, I don't want to be one of these guys who runs just because, like, hey, why not? Let's run. Mm-hmm. It's too hard to do that, and it's too important. I didn't run in 2012, despite a lot of people asking me to do it, because I didn't feel like I was ready. I had an antiquated view of the presidency at that time, apparently.
And now you're like, it's a free-for-all.
Now I'm like, what? Yeah, kind of, I had 15 months as governor. I was overqualified. But at the time, I had 15 months as governor. I thought, like, I can't do this. Like, this is ridiculous. This is not right. And maybe politically, I had a good chance to win the nomination. I felt like in your heart, you got to believe that you can win. And that if you win, that you're qualified to do the most important job in the world. That's the way I feel about it. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I'd think about it. But only if I thought that I had a path to win. And if I didn't, then you have no business going out and asking people for money and asking people for their vote.
Right.
They're just not right.
I will say this. We haven't always agreed on everything. We fight and argue about stuff, but I've always appreciated that you come on the show and that you talk.
Listen, you're great.
Thank you for coming on the show, and I love what you do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Let me finish. It's a fascinating book, and it's available now. Governor Chris Christie, everybody. For real, man. Thank you.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and the Comedy Central app. Watch full episodes and videos at thedailyshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun.
the I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.